and to keep fighting. For NPR News, I'm Addie Costello in Madison, Wisconsin.
This is NPR News. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Leila Fadel. One of the most important art, design, and philosophical movements to come out of Japan is now nearly 100 years old. It's called Minge, or folk crafts. It reflects a reaction to modernity and industrialization. And as NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports, it's having yet another revival.
We're at the Prefectural Museum of Art and Design in the city of Toyama on Japan's northwest coast. An exhibition touring the country is displaying items of daily use collected by founders of the Minge movement. A black iron kettle, a tie-dyed kimono, pieces of earth-tone pottery. Museum curator Masane Naito explains how the founder of the Minge movement, Muneyoshi Yanagi, thought about it.
Let's focus on the everyday lives of ordinary citizens, reevaluate them, recognize their importance, and find the beauty hidden within them.
Rather than exquisite masterpieces made by famous artists from museums or homes of the wealthy, Minge is art for the people. It's often simple and rustic, handmade by nameless local craftsmen to be used as much as enjoyed. Next, Naito shows us a thick, dark wooden hook for hanging pots and kettles over a hearth, the symbolic center of home and family life in Japanese farmhouses.
As cooking is done in the fire directly below, the rising steam and smoke enhance the shine, and the beauty of the hook increases with use.
Muneyoshi Yanagi announced the creation of the Minge movement in 1926. In his book, The Unknown Craftsman, he wrote about ethical consumption in an age of mass-produced products.
On reflection, one must conclude that in bringing cheap and useful goods to the average household, industrialism has been a service to mankind, but at the cost of heart, of warmth, friendliness, and beauty.
Yanagi befriended British potter Bernard Leach, who helped to bridge the artistic traditions of Asia and Europe. In 1936, Yanagi founded the Japan Folk Crafts Museum, or Mingekan, in Tokyo. He exhibited entire rooms finished with folk arts to show a harmony among the things people use and the spaces they live in. Naito admits the idea is a bit like an IKEA showroom. As the Minge movement was developing, Japan was building an empire. Yanagi and his colleagues collected folk art from Japan, as well as from Korea, Manchuria, and Taiwan, which Japan had colonized, and Hokkaido and Okinawa, which it annexed.
One aspect of it was that people from Tokyo in tailored suits came to rural areas, praised items that were not valued by local people, and took lots of them home. There is certainly criticism, even today in Japan, that there may have been some elements of a colonialist mindset.
While Yanagi was mainly a thinker and collector, the movement's co-founder, Kanjiro Kawai, was a creator. In the city of Kyoto, he designed his own wooden home with a pottery kiln and workshops. The home is now a family-run museum. Tamai Sagi is his granddaughter. She shows us some wooden drawers for shoes near the entrance. She was 9 when he died. She remembers that he was constantly creating art and entertaining guests.
There were always guests coming and going. It was rare for our family to have privacy, but it was a fun house and very lively. Even if I had a cold and was sleeping, or if I had to go to the bathroom, I still had to put on clothes and greet guests. But I wasn't dissatisfied at all about it.
Kawai declined most official honors, and he seldom signed his works, which he believed were signatures enough in themselves. Sagi says her grandfather was very generous with his creations.
He gave them much as farmers give away vegetables they've grown. Anyway, I think he gave away more than he sold.
Kawai's house and every piece of pottery, furniture, sculpture, and calligraphy in it are his artistic life work. They express who he was and show what he found beautiful. The true nature of beauty, he wrote, is the joy found in all things and events. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Toyama, Japan.
Now for some news in the world of 20th century modernist literature. Virginia Woolf, the novelist and essayist, author of Orlando and Mrs. Dalloway, was also a poet. That's according to a recent finding from a scholar in Liverpool. NPR's Andrew Limbong has more.
The funny thing is, Sophie Oliver isn't even a Virginia Woolf scholar. She's a lecturer in modernism at the University of Liverpool, and she was doing research on a different literary figure, Gertrude Stein, at the Harry Ransom Center, an archive library at the University of Texas at Austin.
And I'm there for a month, and it's really hot, so I never go outside because I went to Texas in August for some reason.
So while she's basking in the AC, she thought, oh, I might as well poke around the Virginia Woolf files. And while she's looking through a folder of letters Woolf wrote to her niece Angelica,
suddenly at the back, there's these two pieces of paper that were obviously once folded on kind of blue notepaper. So they're quite different from the letters. And they've got this pencil writing on them. It's obviously these two kind of quickly drafted poems. And I immediately think, well, that's odd because Virginia Woolf isn't a poet.
One poem, a jokey, punny poem about hiccups, was dedicated to her nephew, Quentin. The other, titled Angelica, goes like this.
The name was lazy and lovely, but the name was not the whole of her. There was the body and the soul of her. Angelica, Angelica. The angel name, but oh the shame. Drink she took to, Dady too, fellow Dady, oh how shady, to sport with Dady and the tangled yellow hair.
Oliver scoured existing Woolf research, asked Woolf experts, and couldn't find any other mention of these poems. But the other question was, who is this Dady person?
Dady was the nickname of a man called George Rylance, who was a poet, a scholar of Shakespeare.
A friend of Woolf's, who's around at least often enough that Woolf could do that thing aunts love to do, razz her niece about having a crush.
These are signs, I think, of Woolf's ebullience, the fact that she was kind of silly and liked to indulge in play and nonsense, I suppose, with these children as her way of connecting with them. She didn't have children of her own. That was a sore point for her.
The two poems add some more texture to our existing idea of Virginia Woolf. As for Oliver, accidental finds like these are the thrill of archival research. Not bad for an afternoon AC break at the library. Andrew Limbong, NPR News.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Layla Faldin.
X-ray. X-ray. X-ray time. X-ray. X-ray. I've had mine. I'm ready now and ready to go. Little old x-ray told me so. Just took a minute, click, 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 for the picture to show I wasn't sick. Thought I wasn't, but I wanted to know. Honey, baby, I am raring to go. Yes, I'm ready now and raring to go. Cause the little old x-ray told me so.